Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the Camera Life Podcast. This is the Random Photography Show, where we just talk random about photography on the show. Quite self-explanatory. We'll pick it up as we go along.
It makes me laugh that it's the Random Photography Show, but it's the only one where I actually come up with a list of things we're going to talk about. but still, it's still pretty random.
But yeah, welcome. This is the Camera Life Podcast, episode 58, I believe. Jeez, we're doing well.
It's a
very, very hot here in Australia. Justin and I are coming to you from Victoria, Australia, for those of you that are overseas. And our special guest tonight, who's returning to the show, and he's currently rocking a very cool Leica look, is Dennis Smith.
Hello.
G'day, Dennis. Hello, welcome.
Hello.
It's so good to have you on.
I'm a little calmer at this end of the day. I think you saw me the other morning at my peak manic, which was...
I was loving it. I was loving the comments.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no, it was very good. Very good. It was funny because I'm dealing with the show and I'm watching your comments and then I'm getting your emails over here. Yeah. I'm like, wait, yes, what are you doing? Like, I've emailed this person and I'm doing this and there's a ball of light from Kangaroo Island. I'm sending it to Matt Nettheim. And that was great. Yeah, we love it.
He must have thought I was a complete egg, man. Like, anyway, but it was great. What a guy. What a fascinating, inspiring guy.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I was genuinely inspired.
Pretty cool. So for those of you watching and eventually listening along at home Thursday last week? Gosh, the time flies. We caught up with Matt Nettheim, who is he's had such an amazing journey in photography. So go back and check that one out, whether it be on the audio or the video podcast. That was episode 57 on last Thursday. So please check it out. And you'll see all of Dennis's comments popping up as you go. But yes, we are joined by Dennis Smith. And obviously the boss is here, Justin. G'day, Justin. How are you?
Good evening. Nice to see you all.
Hi, and you.
Hi, Dennis. Hi, Greg. Hi, hang on. Hi, Philip Johnson.
Hey, Philip.
Good to see you. Evening. First comment. You win, Philip. Yeah. I don't know what you win, but you win something. Jim also says, hey, gang, I'll be on shortly. He is joining us tonight, but he's running 5-10 minutes late. He'll be on at some stage. And Grant says, what happened to Justin's nose? We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Don't worry about this little thing. Don't worry about that. Bruce Moyle says, evening all.
Good
evening,
we'll get to it.
That didn't happen. I was born that way. But it's just this little, cut.
Okay. We will get to that. But look, thanks for joining us in the chat. Feel free to ask questions. And anyone new to the podcast, please make sure you like and subscribe and tickle the bell so you get notifications. So we go live twice a week. And I'm talking about Australian time, but you can do the math via Google for your location. So we go live every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Time. And we go live every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Time.
The Thursday shows at 9 a.m. Australian time, they're interviews, like long-form interviews, and it's all about the photographer we're talking to. And they're at about like 3, 4 p.m. U.S. time, depending on where you are, somewhere there, depending on what state you're in and that sort of thing. Whereas the Monday evening shows, this one, random, and it's not so much about the guest, so we don't care about Dennis tonight. We're not even going to talk about him.
No. So Dennis is just part of the team tonight. He's just
part of the team. Three is the lucky, is good balance. So here we are.
Yeah. If you want to hear more about Dennis, go back and listen to his full interview. But tonight, we're just going to be talking shit with him. And I think the time in the US for tonight's show is about 1 a.m. So there's probably no US listeners unless you're on.
But if you are, well done. We appreciate the dedication. All right, so what's on the list? For the Random Photography Show, I don't know why we've got a list, but
we got a few things on the list. We got the Hi Dennis segment. We'll get to that straight away, but then there's a few other things coming up, including the story about my Canon R5 that if anyone looked at the thumbnail, my R5 Mark II, it went for a little swim. And we'll talk about what happened after that. Dennis and I are going to talk later on about whether the Q3 is worth it, considering how hideously priced it is and how flawed it is and how just it's just there's so many things wrong with it, but it's still so awesome.
Yep. It's like the perfect wife.
Yeah. Ooh. Just love it. Anyway, so we're going to talk about that, and then we'll see if there's any photo news, and we'll just, I mean, ask us questions in the chat, and we'll just talk about whatever you guys want to talk about. That's even better.
We're here for you.
But yeah, first thing we're going to do is, hang on, let me do my fancy thing. Oh, I need the sound effects. We're going to move on to our first segment, which is called Hi, Dennis.
Nothing but the best for you, Dennis, obviously. We've spared no expense.
What have you been up to? Before we do that, tell everyone that hasn't listened to your interview, like who are you and what do you do?
Sure. So I am I'm a Kiwi. So I was born in New Zealand. I moved to Australia 15 years ago to South Australia. And like a lot of foreign men seem to have gravitated here towards the South Australian women, or they bring foreign men in, which is either,
So you're farmed.
Thank you. And I am a commercial photographer. I'm a commercial filmmaker. I am but my passion is I'm a light painter. So I create artworks using light, or I light things with light. I'm a tinkerer and a tonkerer, and it's funny because I've been doing this thing now since the beginning, really the beginning of the explosion of light painting in 2009, and I have not stopped, which is really nice. I consider light painting to be how I maintain my mental health, and photography in general, really, but light painting for me is my safe place. It's where I go when I just need to explode with some form of creativity. But I'm an educator as well. So my super passion is when I get a chance to teach other people or just put a tool in someone else's hand. Nice. That's three. I've got a daughter.
Six cats.
That's it.
That's me. A pretty impressive CV there, my friend. For anyone that hasn't seen Dennis's work, we'll link his sites in the comments in the description below. But I highly encourage anyone to take a look at, especially Dennis's Ball of Light project. But one thing we wanted to talk to you about tonight, because when we spoke to you last time, you were about to pack a bag, chuck your camera in, and jump on a plane to Dubai.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, I'm sure that feels like it was years ago now, but
it's wild.
Talk us through that.
Yeah, so it was. I had one of the strangest years last year. I had not planned. I had a tentative plan to go to India to work on a project I'm working on, and I ended up going to Saudi Arabia to work in Formula One, India, UK, Scotland, like just this epic over to BFOP, and then at the end of the year, a thing popped up in Dubai at the Porsche. This is the biggest Porsche festival in the world, called Icons of Porsche in Dubai, and it is wild how massive it is. It's almost impossible to describe the size of this thing. And the gentleman who I worked with on the Formula One project was project managing the building of it, and he said, "You need to get your butt over here." And so I went, and it was incredible. Dubai is a conundrum, but it's also a 10 p.m. flight from Adelaide, and you get there at 5 a.m. And because no one is ever on the plane, you get four seats, and it's like being business class with a belt buckle in your side. And so I arrived there, and I got to spend 7 days just having 24-hour access to the most astonishing array of Porsche in the world. It was mind-blowing. And
so, just for those of you listening along at home, we are going to bring up some photos. I was actually chatting to Mark Hoot, I can't say his name, Bluthoofed.
That's it.
Who was also at BFOP, and he's been a guest on the show. I was chatting to him today. I was talking to him about something we're working on, and he was declaring his frustration. You know, he gets a bit frustrated because he listens to the podcast more than he watches it. And when we have photos on, we need to be more descriptive.
Let me do that. I can do that. Oh my gosh! Thank you, my friend.
So let me give you. Go on, Justin.
No, nothing. I'm ready to pull the stuff up.
Ready. Pull the stuff up, man.
Actually, no, that's not true. There was something popped into my head, because I've got a strange brain. I was like imagining Dennis describing each pixel, starting from the top left and working our way down towards the bottom right.
Four, six, eight, four, two.
Yeah, roughly what color each pixel is. So just so you can get an idea.
So let me see. That's a great idea. Let me see if in 30 seconds I can describe to someone who's listening what I do. So what I want you to imagine a perfect light painting, automotive light painting situation is you have a vehicle in a relatively dark place. And imagine opening the shutter as it's pointing at the car and then closing it 2 minutes later. It's only illuminated by any ambient light. So at the Porsche event, it was wild, the amount of light. Like, it was completely horrific. But a perfect situation is it being quite dark. And then what I do is I have a tool that is basically a torch or a flashlight, but it's kind of specially designed for this. So it's sort of elongated. If you imagine it's sort of like a book, but a thin book. And the light comes out one end of it, shielded so that the camera can't see it. And I pass the light over the car quite close to it. So I start at the nose. I take the light quite down near the headlight. And I move the light along the car as the shutter's open, and then go to the wheels, and then go to the top, and then go to the wings. And then so I spend however long it takes, really. Like, when I was at Formula One, it was about 2 minutes per car because it was just so much to do. And then sometimes I'll then introduce a light sculpture. So I have light painting tools which are pieces of acrylic with a torch stuck in the end of it, and I add light and texture to that blade, and then I'll take that light and I'll add a sculpture in front or behind or around the car. And so, and it's always in one exposure. I'm quite fanatical about that. 99.364% of all car light painting that you see are multiple exposures combined in Photoshop. I've never done it. I don't know how to do it. And for me, it goes back to the sort of essence of what light painting is. It's in our DNA as light painters, is that if it's not one exposure, it's not really light painting. It's a composite image. And so for me, taking my light painting around cars is just a whole nother level, because what you do is you're creating shape and texture around of these vehicles. But the magic, the magic of it is that every single exposure is different. It's impossible for it to be the same. And so by the nature of that, I am in the vehicle. I am part of the artwork because I've shaped the light around it. So if you weren't able to see, but however, there is just shit tons of video of the process, because I do this process where I always shoot with video and still at the same time so that I can create these sort of blend videos so you can literally see me creating the images.
Just for anyone that we're going to bring up a couple of images, and Jim is about to join us. So lots going on. But Justin and I got the opportunity to watch. G'day, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
You're late. Good,
mate. I'm late. Sorry.
Yep.
At least it's 7:45.
We tell you 7:45.
I don't know if I want.
Treehouse actually opens at 7:30.
Greg there. I'm going to put Dennis there. Jim and I will hang out down at the bottom. I like that better. I think that's better.
Anyway, as I was saying, Justin and I had the opportunity to watch Dennis. He didn't paint a car. He painted another photographer. And and it's, I have to say, Dennis, it's almost like performative art watching you paint
a
subject.
It's a dance.
There's
an idea. One of the things that I do talk about a lot is there's this idea of getting into flow as a creative. Now, that can be anything, writing, singing, dancing, whatever. And for me, my best work is when I get into a flow, like truly in the mind, in and start seeing the light. And yeah, it's a movement. It's a interaction with whatever it is, whether it's a person or a car or in the water, all of that. It's magical. It's truly crazy.
Yeah.
And it hurts. So,
I'm not made to dance. Justin, do you want to bring up some images or do you want me to bring them up?
No, I'm bringing it up. I'm on it. I wanted to hear the description first.
We'll see how it goes. If I did a good job.
So this is the website. This is your auto art website. And just so everyone knows, in the description, there's also Dennis's sort of Dennis Smith website linked down there as well, which is more broad, whereas this is focused on the auto, I assume, Dennis. This is a new website.
Yeah, this page is just auto, just cars and bikes.
Yeah. Should we play this video?
It's a good one, actually. It's very short and it shows the technique.
I'll keep the sound down, will I? We can just chat about it, or you want the
I think one of the things is the reason I started doing these videos was I just wanted people to realize that it's real, that so often I know it's like AI, you know, but people get a bit confused about what it is. So this is me blending the video and the still, just so you can see.
It's very cool the way you do that. I love it. I absolutely I can watch that all day long.
Yeah.
And it's just people strolling in the background, but they won't show up because it's a 2-minute exposure.
It's crazy. And when we were this place here, look at how bright that track is.
It's so bright.
Wild, man. I got to I got a lap of the hot lap in a car around the track. There's a 45-minute video about this trip on my on the YouTube channel, which is wild. I developed a tool to create those vortexes.
Yep.
This thing's sick. This place.
This is one of my favorite spots. This one.
Yeah.
Sorry for those of you on audio, but this is just amazing to watch. You have to come over to YouTube if you want to see this. I know all we're doing is saying, "Wow, that's amazing," but. Do you want me to go back a little bit? What were you talking about, Jim?
Sorry, Dennis. I was just asking, are these, so like once you've got the shot, is it one shot or is it like
always.
Four or five? One frame.
Always one, Never, no photograph you ever see of mine is ever more than one unless I say, and I've done it about 3 times and I still feel ill when I look at it. It's kind of just a philosophy and it's a challenge, right? It's a challenge. For me, like that Formula One shot we saw before by the lanterns, like literally there's only two places on Earth brighter than that. Now, obviously, that shot with the bonnet with the engine is a composite, But yeah, the challenge of doing this in really bright places, I love heaps, heaps. And the Dubai trip up there, I had to use live composite on an Olympus. It was the only way. It was so bright. It was just never going to work any other way.
Those are cool.
Yeah.
This thing is wild, this car. And this is the first time I ever really explored doing this, doing the reflections. Shiny.
Cool. Oh, wow.
It was beautiful. Hey, look at that.
That's the reflections, cool. Was that something you had premeditated to try, or did it pop up in a shot and you were like...
I was just in there, into it. And now that's interesting. The Porsche stuff is not in there. I thought I had updated that video. But there's a you go to the gallery, I think I did a we can just have a short look at it. Have a look at this Porsche one. This will not
second video, Justin.
Oh, just go the other video.
Yeah, this is just a quickie of the Porsche event. It's only 2 minutes, but it's this. So I'm a kid of the 90s, right? Seeing a 956, I just could not believe that it was there. And I had this place to myself at night, full access, like 24 hours a day. And so this was the most expensive car on site by some margin. Look at this. I'm like, see, I'm on my own. There's like security guards standing there going, "You're a freak."
Yeah.
But it was so bright. Oh my God. Like this spot here was insanely bright.
But you've mastered the light in every shot. Yeah. It's amazing.
It would make it a massive challenge though, having all that ambient light, surely, like to not show up.
Yeah, ridiculous. Absolutely crazy. But yeah, these cars, the 956 and the 962, I couldn't believe it. But yeah, it was a really special experience for me. I've always loved Porsches since I was a kid, but I grew up pretty poor. And so there was no chance I was ever going to. Now, this guy here, René Stoud, is one of them. There was a guy there who's like easily the most famous Porsche photographer in the world. And I went and made a bit of work around his gallery. And we became quite close over that weekend after that. But yeah, it was amazing, man. I got to shoot Mark Webber, which was a bit of a buzz.
Yeah,
it was cool. It was mind-bending, surreal, actually. And Dubai is a pretty freaky place.
Yeah,
I could talk a bit about that, but this event was pretty wild. And we're planning a bit of a thing for there again this year, a bit more structured.
Oh, very cool.
Thank you. Awesome. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, it was awesome. Surreal. It was a bit like the Formula One thing, like quite surreal being there and experiencing. Yeah. So this guy here, this is a beautiful story, actually. So this guy here, I had an iPad connected to the camera. So each time I made an image, people could see the image when it was built. So there was, if there was no confusion, it was real. It was like, ba-doom, there it is. And right behind us here is this massive array of people. And this guy, his what ended up being his boss, said, oh, can you make an image of this guy? And so I made this image, and he came over behind the camera and became quite emotional. It's come to my attention that being a German man, that's even more remarkable. And he looked at it and said to me, it's all on film. He looked at it and he said, this is the most beautiful photograph I've ever seen in my life. And it turns out he was the mechanic on these 962s and 956s forever. And he was retiring it was one of the most beautiful experiences, seeing this guy become really emotional, like actually crying over an image I made of him. And it was funny because the thrill was all mine. I used to jizz over these cars when I was a kid. A little boy from Auckland. But yes, it was a real thrill. And hard to light paint. Holy moly. They were, it was always fast. I didn't have any time. But it was cool. It didn't matter, right? The flaws don't matter when you're making stuff that blows people's brains. They don't care if it's been an Olympus or whatever, you know.
I think so often with light painting that people get sucked into multiple, right, you know, blending and, you know, it's like almost like over the top perfection of every little bit is lit perfectly. And it's sort of you lose the art form of it.
If you click on that one at the lanterns, if you click on the one
this one.
Yeah. So this thing here. Okay. This is wild. So before I went to Saudi, they sent me. We had some guys out scouting locations and sending me photos and videos. And well, I don't know what the hell they took the photos on, but clearly the cameras or their phones were compensating for the fact it was brighter than the surface of the sun because it looked quite dark. And just to the left. I've got it in the behind the scenes video. I show a shot to the left is the entrance to the King's Guard. And what they do is they obviously decided that anyone that approaches the gates of the King's Guard has to be completely blind by the time they get to the gates. So they have like 64 trillion lumens of light coming straight towards this point where we are. Right. And so we went and did a scout, and then we were sitting at the accommodation the night before, and I was saying to my guys, I was like, I don't know about this. Like, it's a big effort to get this car there and all these people, because we had a crew of about 30 people each night on these. Mm-hmm. And then me and my mate turned around and we looked at the window, and it was just this giant block out curtain. So we pulled the curtain down in the hotel, got these C-stands and weights, and just to the left out of shot is the curtains from the hotel. Yeah, blocking the car. Awesome.
Yeah, so just blocking the light shining on the car, that's it. Insane.
Yeah, yeah. That's crazy. And this shot, we went all night. This was the hero shot. And I took about 120 exposures, scanning the car every single time, doing the flames and sparks every single time. And it was about an hour from sunup, and you can see the car trails on the left. The traffic just never stops because they're awake through the night there because it's so hot.
Wild.
Do you ever, I'm sure this is probably a thing, but do you get one bit perfect and then you try to work on another part, but then you muck up the first bit that you got perfect, and it's like you're chasing your tail sometimes trying to, because it's a performance, a 2-minute performance.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, now I've just got to add some light here, but then you muck up something at the start of that performance and you're like, shit. And then does that happen?
Yes.
Is it frustrating?
Oh my God, mate. This you see in the behind the scenes video, I talk about that quite a bit. And this location. So you do the car and you get the car, and I have to remember each part. And then Ludo, who is my creative director, there's a big like 50-inch screen there where everyone's standing watching, is tethered. So every time another closes, everyone can see the shot, right? And I'm just pissing sweat. Like, it was so hot, and I was physically, and then I'll turn around and I'll look at the screen, and he'll look at me and he'll just be looking at me like this, like dude, you missed the wing. And my God, or whatever. So then, so you remember the angle and then you go, but the blue thing, we did that about 40 times. Just doing the blue bit, not scanning the whole car, and then we scan the car, and then the sparks might be a bit too much or too little. But I was relentless. I would not fold to the idea of composing.
Why don't we just do the blue from this one and the sparks from that one? Like it'd be a 2-minute job for a good Photoshop guy to just like blend a couple of these together, since you're working on a tripod or whatever. But I love that you don't.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so here's I'll try and keep this short, but I have a fantastic story from this site. So every single night, there was no plan. The contract was very clear about the deliverables, right? And there was never talk of doing portraits, but I knew I'd end up doing some portraits, right? The very first night, boom, like 5 or 6 people turned up from Saudi Motorsport the Saudi Motorsport and the organization. And it was a bit frustrating at first, but then what happens, I realized it was perfect because that's the client, right? So they turn up and I'm making portraits of them. That's how I get used to the scene. But what I ended up saying to my guys, okay, here's the deal. I don't want to know who the people are, because that puts a bit of pressure on. And so this dude turns up here to this shoot and he comes up to me and he says, I want to sit on the back wheel and do a meditation thing. And I'm like, impossible, man. Like, I'm really busy. That's just, he just looks at me and he says, no, that's what we're doing. And I was like, whatever, sat on the car. It was crazy. The guy was like a statue, right? Like perfect. The shot was perfect. There's a video of him coming over to me and just throwing his arms around and giving me a big hug. He was the CEO of Saudi Motorsport. And it was cool. I had no idea. And I was like, dude, you have no idea. But auto art is wonderful. And Dubai was amazing.
Very cool. Were those portraits with that, this kind of thing that I've got up on the screen there? So the same car, same setup, but you were just doing, you're popping people into the scene and doing shots for them. Yeah. That's so cool.
So this woman here, her name is Gag, G-A-G, and she's the owner and CEO of the marketing company that I was working with. There's a lot of misconceptions about Saudi Arabia. This is a very super successful, powerful woman. Saudi Arabia is full of them. It's astonishing. I dealt with so many women and it was just fantastic.
Interesting. Because you get a different impression over here sometimes. It's probably just because we're not over there on the ground getting experience of it, but you sort of get the impression that there isn't women running big businesses and things
there's all sorts of weird misconceptions. And so Saudi Motorsport, there were 450 people in the office at the track. And 50% of them were women, and they just, you could be in an office in Australia that they were, it was amazing.
Very cool, Dennis. Thank you. I just want to jump to a couple of quick comments before we move on to the second story of the night. No, that one's not necessary. Thank you, Grant.
Jim made it. Grant thought Jim was trying to connect a potato up instead of his Nikon Z8.
That's why he wasn't
on the show, yeah. But he made
Bruce said, I love Dennis BTS videos. I would love to know how you combine the footage and the still together because I haven't asked you in person yet.
Oh, Bruce.
Also, like, I would love to know that. So I was watching the video going, yeah. How have you done this? How did you do that?
AI, I just put two memory cards into the computer and say, hey, Siri, make it look fully sick. Oh, Siri just turned off. That's hilarious. I'll tell you exactly how I do it. So this is no, because I know Bruce, Bruce has an IQ of about 947, so he's probably has already figured it out. But so what I do is I have the rig. So my rig over in Saudi had three cameras, Dubai three. So it's a rig that I have always two cameras as close as possible to each other. And one is I use a variety of things. So Sony A7S3, because you need the dual ISO, so you need to be at 12,800 and wide open to get the amount of light and shooting at 100 frames a second. Mm-hmm. I move away from the 180 degree rule because I'll shoot at the slowest shutter speed I can. So generally at 100, I'll be at 100 so that you get a little more light trail, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. And then sitting next to it at about as close a focal length as you can, I have my stills camera. And so the workflow is I walk over to the camera, I press record, start shooting, I walk into the scene, open the shutter and make the exposure. And then what that generally gives me, although I was out till 4:30 yesterday morning shooting, doing the same thing, and I look at all the video was out of focus today, so I'm a bit mortified about that. That's pretty cool. But then what you do is bring the video into Premiere, and then I lay the still over the top on the layer above it. And then what I do is I just literally just change the opacity on the still. And it's as simple as that sounds. there's several really complicated things. And you'll see they never really match up. And that's mainly because of parallax error. So you'll see here when you go over, if you go back over the yellow one, that's a good example, although it's pretty good. Here you can see the wall in the middle there and the lip of the rim of the yellow night one don't quite match up.
That's
parallax error because you get the two sensors are 100 mil apart. Mm-hmm. Now, if you go back, so I regularly shoot on an 85 and at that focal length, and so you go further back and it's reduced, but mm-hmm. it's still always there. But like all of this stuff, right? People's brains are exploding. They don't give a shit that there's a little.
Yeah.
Right?
They're not saying the 1% things that you are.
Anything that does is not there for the right reason.
We just want to see the fact that you're moving that light and it's creating those crazy patterns and illuminating the section. Like it's,
I think it was on your Instagram of you standing in an archway, just almost like, it was almost like you were painting yourself in a dance.
That showed it
really well, that because the light trail remained like you were just talking about.
Yeah. Well, I was in yesterday morning at about 4 o'clock, I was in this abandoned factory that's been demolished, and there was all this sort of detritus on the ground, and I was actually just scanning and painting it in with light, and that is really beautiful as well because you're actually painting with light. But there is another step. Bruce, I appreciate your comment, mate. I have only one secret in light painting, and I'll take that to the grave. The line, my line project. So this line here is a light painting project where I introduce a line into the scene. It's a mental health project. And that process is the one I never talk about. But once I do that blend in Premiere, it each one is slightly different. How much I bring the still in.
Computer's going crazy.
Then what I do is yeah, then nest it, and then start playing with zooming in and out. But it's quite, it sounds very easy. It's very, very hard.
No.
Cool. For anyone watching or listening along at home, if you want to get some more in-depth analysis of Dennis's work, Dennis is an open book. If you go to his YouTube channel and his personal website, not necessarily, I mean, there's a lot of stuff to learn from the automotive one, step by step on how to do everything. Dennis is an open book. He shares his knowledge, he shares his skills for the sake of others learning and you know, enhancing their own creative output, which is absolutely amazing. And we love you for that, Dennis.
Yeah, well, it's really important. I know you're about to kick off, but I've just started doing a 3-minute series of reels called Tips and Tricks, and that's like 3 minutes of just I've got about 40 of them. I've done three, and they're just like bang, 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 just the real basics.
Yeah,
and your YouTube channel is called The School of Light.
The School of Light, yes.
The School of Light, yeah.
Yeah, link it below for everyone. Yeah. But yeah, I encourage you to check it out. Some really inspiring stuff and some really clever tips for anyone to learn from. But in the interest of time, I think we will jump to our next topic, because I'm keen to know a number. I've got questions. Like, what happened to the camera? What happened to your nose?
Oh.
Let's start with the camera.
What happened first? What happened first?
Yeah.
The nose happened first.
Okay, let's hear about it.
All right. Well, before we do that, we have to officially jump to our next segment.
Oh, okay. Called. Sorry.
Did it survive? So for Jim and I and Grant, actually, yep, all went to a wedding.
As guests.
So we were guests at a wedding. Three photographers who have shot weddings before.
Yep.
And we were all guests at a good friend's wedding. It was very cool being guest and not having any responsibilities. Up until they rang us a day or two before. Was it a day before, Jim?
I reckon it was a day before, yeah.
Day before, and they said, any chance you could just throw a camera in because we want to get a video and a photo of the whole bridal party jumping in the pool, and the photographer and videographer won't be there when it happens because it's going to be close to midnight.
Yeah.
So you can just throw your camera in the car.
Just one camera in.
Just one camera in the car just to grab that moment for us. That'd be great because it's a really important photo that we wanted, and video too, photo and video. And what's funny is these guys are legends. So, of course, we were going to do it. But it's like we have to bring a lot of equipment.
Yeah.
It's not a one-camera job. It's a every light and every camera we own kind of a job.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because you don't muck around, and it's dark. I don't know if anyone's ever tried to capture an action shot of people jumping in water at nighttime before. You don't do it with no lights. It's usually fairly average if it's just ambient light. So Jim and I, doing what we did, we packed up all of it, everything we owned, brought it along to this wedding
just in case, because we were like, we don't know what we're gonna need, we don't know what the setup is,
yeah,
we're just gonna wing it. But we bought literally every light we own,
everything,
camera.
You were in your element, Justin. You love taking everything with you.
Love it. And actually, Greg, before the pool stuff unfolded, I decided to not only take all of my digital photography equipment, I also took my film camera and shot 4 rolls of film.
Hey, well done.
Because that's what I like to do on my day off. I actually had a great time. We'll talk about that on a future show, but I shot 4 rolls, a couple of color, like Kodak Portra, Kodak Gold, black and white roll. And that was actually, I would highly recommend that to anyone that's shot weddings before but is going as a guest. If you've got a film camera, just take that instead. It's makes the day really fun. You skulk around looking for a photo. One there, few over there. Yep. Then you're like, oh, I'm done.
Not every photo, just a photo.
Just a few photos. Yeah. It's really fun. Anyway, we'll get those developed down at Lubina Labs and go over that in a future episode. The pool thing unfolded. Jim took photos. Jim gave Grant one of his Z8s to take photos with. We set up continuous lights instead of flash because I was going to shoot some video.
Right.
And that's where everything started to get a bit crazy. Should I bring up your photos, Jim? What do I do? You reckon?
Well, Grant said he slid into your DMs and dropped a video of the pool party. Is that...
I also have a video of the pool party that I sort of put together today. Thanks, Grant.
I've watched that before I jumped on. It's pretty good. The video.
The reel is.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I don't think he had any of my footage at that point, so I think he's only used his footage. So what was cool was the videographer that was hired. He was supposed to leave at like 9:30 or something like that, and he sniffed out that this pool thing was happening, and he was like, "I'm staying. I want to get footage of this." So technically, I probably could have not shot anything, just let Jim do the photos, and I could have just jumped in the pool. But good. I want to commend him because that's the sort of thing Jim and I used to do. These moments don't happen at every wedding. And you can't always stay if you've got commitments on home or whatever. You might not be able to stay. And I think that's what happened with the photographer. But if I was that photographer, there's no way I would have been leaving early when I knew that was happening, unless I had something that I needed to get home to.
Yeah, just fair enough.
Because, yeah, exactly. If you've got commitments, you've got commitments. But it's these kind of moments in weddings that not only the couple will remember those photos and love those photos forever, but it will book your weddings in the future when you put images up that are from these sorts of moments. Where are we? I'll bring up some of Jimbo's photos and Grant's.
And Grant's.
We're still here for anyone listening. We're just waiting.
I'm just trying to figure out how to use this thing.
I was going to start singing. I sang at both my weddings.
It says it's working, but it is not.
While you're doing that, I'll just jump to a couple of comments. Craig has said, awesome, Dennis. We need to talk about the Porsche thing at BFOP this year.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware you did that. Some of my favorite cars ever.
Yeah, we did cars. My workshop was cars last year.
Yeah, the Tirana. That used to be my favorite car growing up.
A couple of Tiranas, mate.
I've got it, Jay, if you want.
If you can get it to come in, you do it.
Yeah,
you do it.
And
Oh,
wow.
That's awesome.
All right, I'll flick through them. If you want me to stop, yell out, Jay, because you...
What?
Oh. That's with gusto.
Oh, yeah, this is it.
I was shooting the wide 20mm on the Z8. Grant had the 50, so he shot from the side.
I love that. It's two angles. It's so cool.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Have you ever seen the video of the woman jumping off the boat with her wedding dress on?
And she gets stuck.
Whoa.
That's the scariest thing ever.
That's the first thing I thought about. I thought, oh, these are...
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, what a magical moment.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. In here, there's cool. Justin.
There's the lights.
Yeah. There's Grant. So, we had a couple of lights either side. These lights standing up, they're actually the DJs.
Yeah.
So, he had these cool lights. And then the lights lying down, these ones down here, they're my Godoxes. And Justin had some. These little stick lights, the little Godox ones here. So.
Oh, wicked. Damn.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Oh, the sex.
Yeah, the DJ played sax. It was awesome. So he was just DJing and then just playing sax to the songs, and it takes everything up a notch, 100%. It was great.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the best parts.
Is that you in the pool?
So if you look at this photo. Where was it? So in the corner of this photo is a guy that's jumped in a pool.
What?
With an R5 Mark II. And then... Yeah.
That's pretty wild.
Did you go under with it?
Yeah, well...
I've got some footage. The face says it all.
Not only did he go in, so there you go, that's...
That's Justin's nipples. I've always wanted to see them.
Hello.
You're welcome, Greg.
Whose camera is that?
So that's mine.
James. Oh, that's what Grant. Yours, yeah.
So Grant's shooting my other Z8. And then, you can see that's
it's
dropping.
Yeah, that's got a bit of...
And then so not only, yeah, so the R5 stopped working. And then what would you do? You'd grab your more expensive camera, you grab the R3.
Well,
and then you jump back in the pool with that.
It's got better weather sealing. And I actually,
the job wasn't done, weather is the key word here.
So the R5 Mark II, because it was dark, I was actually shooting with a 35 1.8 on it, which isn't a weather sealed lens either. So, so the one that went underwater was actually, the R5 Mark II has got some pretty big cooling vents on it for the video. And the 35 1.8 is not weather sealed. So it definitely got wet. So, pretty wet.
Is it working, Justin?
Dead wet or recoverable wet?
Well, I'll tell you after I show you some of the footage that I got, because I've actually got the clip. I was rolling when I jumped in.
Oh my gosh.
So we can prove it. Hang on, I'll see if Final Cut will play ball to share. Apparently my computer doesn't want to share anything tonight.
Grant said, commitment for an unpaid gig. Imagine the commitment for when you are paid.
Yeah, well, we have.
And Yelena said, hey, Yelena, lucky straps tested in every element. Same for the camera. That's very true.
If I can do full screen and do it that way.
That's so good.
Craig Murphy has said, these are cool. Oh, another earlier comment from Yelena saying, last thing I told Steph when I left the wedding, I assume, please don't drown in that dress.
Yeah.
That's a nice parting.
Olympus used to market their weather sealing by having like spraying water at them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they still do.
Yeah.
They did it with, I think the OM3.
Yeah.
I think I saw of them testing it. And yeah, they've got like a little sprinkler system in the factory.
That's it.
Oh. Yeah.
And I take when I do my liquid light stuff, I have two or three cameras sitting just above the surface of the water. And I used to have a little towel and stuff. And then I just gave up and I would just come out the water with my wet hands and operate the camera. Yeah. Never had a problem.
When the Fujifilm X-T1 or X-T2 first came out, there's a video of someone washing it under running water.
Amazing.
Like the tap is just running and they're just, and it survived. All right, let's see what you got.
All right, so here's the footage, and I'm gonna put it out there and say that also this isn't color graded or anything probably yet, but this was worth drowning a camera for, I think. But I'll let you guys be the judge. Let's turn that music off.
No, leave it on.
Oh, you want a little bit of music?
Yeah.
A little bit of background music. Experience.
Crank it, boss.
Yeah.
So cool.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
If you look closely, you'll spot some Jim in some of these clips, cruising around, taking shots, getting wet. Grant got saturated. He didn't even get in the water. There he is. Yeah.
He's covered my Z8 in chlorine.
Yeah, the chlorine didn't do well for the cameras, that's for sure.
Next.
Yeah, there's cameras everywhere. The video guy was rolling. He had a drone. There's Grant in the corner there.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just got to have fun.
Yep. That's it.
That's the groom.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's the groom doing flips.
Oh, it's so cool. What an awesome way to end a wedding.
It was a good way to end a wedding.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Well, until I went swimming. But yes.
Yeah.
Grant reckons Google says the Z8 can go underwater.
Yeah, so Grant
Googled it.
This is me
jumping in with the R3.
Oh, here we go.
That one was all right.
That's the R3.
It's this next one where I jump in with the R5 Mark II, you'll see.
Justin.
And where it went black there was where it turned off.
Oh, no. Has it turned back on since?
So Jim was nice enough, because we were pretty drunk by this point, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Jim was nice enough. No. We packed it all up wet
and so put it in the back of my car.
No, no. The first thing I did was exactly what Jim said. I got out. I was like, oh, this thing won't, like the screen's still on, but it won't hit record anymore. So I jumped out, popped the battery and just dropped it in my camera bag, grabbed the R3 off the tripod and jumped back in and got some more footage. And then left it for a little while we finished drinking and playing in the pool. And then we packed everything up. Basically, all I did was pop the battery and leave it sort of open, but then packed it in the Pelican case and put it in Jim's car, got on the bus and went home. And the next day, luckily, Jim was out early getting his car and decided to unpack my gear, open everything up and get it airing out as quickly as possible. And I'm excited to say the webcam I'm using tonight is my R5 Mark II. It lives. Cool. It lives. There's a little bit of little bit of corrosion in a couple of the like the point that where you would attach the battery grip and it goes into the bottom of the camera. There's corrosion in there. I don't know. If anyone's interested in a secondhand R5 Mark II, I'll be selling one soon. It's barely used. Still has balance of new camera warranty.
Whenever stuff like that happens to me, Bruce has just said about insurance. Whenever stuff like that happens to me, I'm like, how is it possible the camera didn't die? I have thrashed this thing to death. I need a new one, and I pay an exorbitant amount.
You feel like it's a happy accident, and then it's like, oh, I just won't die.
No.
Crackers Carrick. A good mate. I dropped my XH1 into a river with no lens on it.
Ooh.
And it's now a paperweight.
Yeah, it's now a paperweight. Okay, yeah. No lens. There's nothing stop it. It's just an open hole to take water in. That's rough.
Grant reckons Google says that I can go underwater.
It says you can shoot underwater. I'm not going to test that.
That's a lot of money. I have cleaned my Olympus under running water after a visit to the Speedway. It was fine. Scary, but fine.
Craig, that's cool.
Craig said freshly cleaned.
Yeah.
So, Jim, any of your gear damaged?
No. Well, it doesn't. It's just covered in chlorine, I think.
Have you tested it?
Yeah, they both turn on.
Yeah. Yours didn't go under, though. The thing is, like, we've taken ours in rain and stuff plenty of times.
It's heavy rain.
Heavy rain. They're pretty well weather sealed. It really is that. When you go immersed, especially the R5 Mark II, because it's got holes in it. It's like got cooling holes.
Yeah, it's got those sealed, big vents,
They must be sealed. Otherwise, I was like,
yeah. This has probably got like an alloy, like a heat element in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I'm impressed.
Well, I've stood in the rain with my camera. I've stood in the rain with my XTs. I remember standing in like a typhoon in Kyoto and it was just pouring and I just kept shooting. Like the only thing that... It affected was because the eye sensor would get water on it. It would turn off.
Yeah.
Because it thought I was moving my... No, the screen would turn off. I thought I'd fuck the screen, but all that.
I've had that happen before. It just thinks there's something there the whole time and it keeps...
Freaked me out.
I'm like, oh, my camera's dead. No. Just a bit of water on there.
Yeah, it's crazy. People definitely think that they can't handle getting wet at all.
Well, you know, but you know what's funny though? It's almost the other way these days because I jumped in the pool and the way iPhones and everything are now and everything else, I jumped in the pool and everyone was like, oh, nice that your camera's waterproof. And I was like, no, it's not. And they're like, really? It's not waterproof? I was like, nah, it's definitely not. So it is interesting that obviously there's too many things for them to have to plug up to make it waterproof and also dissipate heat and all that sort of stuff. But it is interesting that they're kind of so far behind phones when it comes to being waterproof.
But well, think about those little Ricohs. They what are they, WR3s or something? Oh, no, that's the car. That's the Subaru. The Ricoh make this little red underwater camera, and they've had it for years.
Yeah.
And it can go down to like 50 feet. Or maybe it's 50 meters and 100. Anyway, it can go really deep. And then you can buy a waterproof housing for it. So without the housing, you can go really deep with it. Like, it's been around forever. And I know it's just a little, you know, it's not a pro-grade DSLR-like camera. Mm-hmm. It's more of a point and shoot. But it's pretty impressive that they've achieved that.
Olympus do one. I've got a couple of the Olympus. What do they call them? Tough. It's called a Tough. And they, when I'm doing my liquid like stuff in the water, I'll often just sit it just above the water so the water laps over it. That thing shoots 100 frames a second. And
Does it really?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, it's stunning and stunning footage.
Really?
Yeah, Bruce Myers just said the Nikon do a kids camera, which is waterproof. I bought one of those for Brendan and years ago. And yeah, it's got like a, you can drop it from 3 meters, you can crush it. Like, these little cameras are crazy. But did the lens survive, Justin? That's my question. Did the lens on the R5 II?
I haven't tested it.
I pulled it apart, Greg, and it seemed pretty dry. Like, I pulled all that because it had a filter on the front and everything. And everything seemed dry, really.
Oh, that's good.
But I left it in the garage near the warm door with a fan on it sort of for the day, and then Justin picked up, early afternoon?
Yeah. We didn't do the rice trick. Everyone said, did you put it in rice?
Yeah,
I was like, no, I didn't. I should have probably, but...
Or just silica packets.
I think Jim's strategy of just quite a warm garage was...
Stick a silica package up into the battery compartment. That helps sometimes.
That was our adventure, maybe I'm speaking for Jim and Grant here, but I had a great time. It was really fun. It was a fair bit of work, and I might have killed a camera. It's come back to life, but who knows whether it'll go back away from life again. We had a great time. It was really fun doing something like that. That had we weren't getting paid, and it was we do whatever we wanted.
There are expectations.
I told him if the footage doesn't turn out, you'll get your money back. it was a good time, and it's fun to use your skills for people sometimes where there's no, it's not a transaction, you know. It's
the outcome is gorgeous. I mean, that's they'll remember that forever.
They probably would have been happy with like an iPhone photo and video quality, and we were like, no, like, we're going to do this, we're going to do it as best as we possibly can.
I think it's wonderful. So what happened to your nose then, Justin? Was it the DJ and his saxophone?
The DJ was actually really cool. So I don't know if it was the DJ or someone brought all these little like glow sticks that are like this long. They're foam. What's that?
That was me. Sorry.
No. Oh, that's okay. so they brought these like, they were like light sticks, foamy things, and they like were like rainbow colored lights, and everyone had them. It was like a rave. Everyone's like on the dance floor,
battery powered light,
flinging their battery powered light sticks around. And Jim and I were having like a fake little lightsaber competition, but then Jim turned it around and hit me with a battery end on my nose.
Jim,
I think it was an accident.
Oh, no wonder he got up early the next day and tried to fix your camera for you.
Yeah, I think he felt bad.
Justin has stopped complaining about it.
Well,
that's good.
You brought it up.
He didn't believe me that it was bleeding.
No, I didn't. On the night, he goes, "You're bleeding." I was like, "Don't be an idiot." And then
I'm going to jump in the pool.
He grabbed it and showed me, and I was like, "Oh, okay." And then, and then we jumped in the pool.
Yeah.
So that's all those stories.
The camera survived, but Justin didn't.
The camera survived. We all survived. I'm impressed with Canon's waterproofing. Same with Nikon's, even though Jim didn't get in the pool with his because he's a wuss.
Well, Jim's got to run a business, so, you know, he needs to keep his assets clean.
That's true. But on the other hand, his gear's insured and mine's not.
I have insurance.
Still.
All right. Let's move on to
the next segment.
Is there any photo news?
Photo news? No.
Okay, cool. Moving on.
There's a Fujifilm Summit. There's a Fujifilm Summit on the 20th of March, and they typically, at the summit, release at least one new camera.
Okay.
Aren't they doing that medium format fixed lens thing?
Nah, it would be my dream. Is that of any... Actually, okay. Well, this is basically crossing straight from photo news to the next segment. No. Leica Q3, is it worth it?
What do you think?
Is that so this rumored medium format camera is like same sort of thing as a Q3. Fixed lens, amazing quality, but smaller than an interchangeable lens version.
Yeah.
Is that something that interests you, Dennis? Because you're a Q3 shooter, are you not?
Yeah, well, look, not only that, but I've also shot a lot with medium format Fuji. I'm I'm just putting the final touches on a. I do a series called Smith Tries Stuff, where I use stuff, and I had a GFX 100S2 for about 4 weeks and shot the shit out of that thing, and it's wild. Like, there's no, and I've shot with all their medium format stuff, and it's one of the reasons that they liked me using this stuff is because light painting is the extreme, right? It's like full dark, ultra bright.
That
sensor in that thing is just crazy.
Pretty full on. I reviewed the 100S2, and I'm not typically a medium format photographer. I'm a Fuji shooter, but I'm not medium format.
Yeah.
It's so impressive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the big problem with it, and this will not be any surprise to anybody, is that you go, and I talk about this in my reviews. I go, is this camera for you? Nope. if you think it is, you're wrong. Because there's only 0.02% of the photographic public that this camera is good for, because it's a cheap camera, right? In real terms, it's quite cheap, but you're buying a new computer. There is just no doubt about that. And a shit ton of storage, because I've got a pretty grunty Mac, and it just gave me the bird every time I put a memory card near it.
Really? Well, I had to upgrade mine to a brand new MacBook Pro my old iMac wouldn't take it.
How old your?
Well, it would have chugged.
Yeah, it just slows right down. Like Lightroom, just my whole system would just go. A, you take too many photos, idiot. And B, I'm just going to make this hard for
it's,
you.
It's interesting because I thought like for light painting, like it would be very few photos. So I thought for you, like you would be the prime candidate for a big megapixel sensor that you shoot for 10 hours and get 6 photos or something. What,
but like, I'm also a not really. Like I come back from a so if I'm going light painting, I still come back with a chunk of images, right? But it was, so here's a very quick GFX story. So when the GFX 100S came out, the big body one with the grip on it, I took they gave me like that and all the glass, and I was going to change over to that for my commercial work. But the vast majority of my commercial work is alongside video being recorded, so we don't use any flash. And so everything has to be natural light. And so I took it out and I shot with it, and it was beautiful, like it's wild. But the problem is when you're wide open on a GFX, the depth of field is about, it's nothing. And so I went back with all these images, and they were just unusable because they were at a university, and you need a bit of depth of field. So I had to bail on the idea with that. But for light painting, unimaginably perfect. It's wild. The dynamic range is just to die for. And of course, no one needs more than 10 megapixels. So 100 is just, you can crop into a nasal here and it's fine.
You really can.
I do this thing where I take this image I made, this massive outdoor light painting, and there's a bit of graffiti on the wall, and I zoom into that and enlarge it. It's comical how big it is.
Pretty amazing.
So all that being said, if they made a fixed lens sort of semi-pocketable RF camera, is that something you would even consider? Or
No.
Tell me why.
No, because well, I'll tell you why. So we're about to talk about this, right? So the Q3 and the idea of having a fixed lens camera was was really attractive to me, and it was one of the best photographic decisions I've ever made. But it's a manageable size, it's a manageable file. So it's 60 megapixels, so my computer doesn't bother. I just opened my Lightroom. I've had this camera for 1 year now, and I'm about to do a 1 year with a Q3, and I've made 25,000 images with it. And
nice.
Yeah, and so I've really pushed it hard. But I just know, having experienced that 100 megapixel sensor, that it's just unnecessary for the idea of the camera, like it is with the Q3, is that the idea of it is that it's more of a street camera, right? It's more of a shooting from the hip, going to India like I did, and when I'm going to the city, I take it with me. Mm-hmm. And you just, 100 megapixels is for very high-end architectural work, very high-end product photography, very high-end everything photography. I just don't know how necessary it is for run-and-gun casual street photography. That's my initial thought on the idea of it. Although I will no doubt shoot shit out of one and may feel different. But the problem is you, I don't know how much it's going to be, but I just don't, this thing here is the, it's like it, it you just don't, you wouldn't need it. This thing's so tiny, and for the, it'll be similar money to this.
That's what I have to imagine. It's got to be similar money to a Q3.
Well, I'm just trying to work out what a 100S is worth. 100S, let's go with the 100 Mark II, because at this stage we don't know which of the sensors or processes it, if it's
Look, real. And we're going to talk about this. I have quite controversial feelings on, everyone bangs on about the price of the Leicas, right?
Yeah.
It's not an expensive camera in the relatively, right? It's not an expensive camera relatively. You go out and buy a new Sony, what's my doodle, or
A7R5, like, which has got that level sensor in it, which has obviously got more, you know, it's got more specs and stuff. It can do more stuff, but that's going to cost you what, $5,000 or whatever, just for the body.
Plus a piece of glass.
A decent lens.
The equivalent lens and body is about the same price as all the others high end, right? And the reality is, I use an A7R. I've got an A7R4 and A7S3s, right? Now they are also quite specific, very focused cameras. No one just goes and buys an A7R5 or A7R4. They're buying it because they're a commercial photographer that requires very high-end focusing on the eye every single time, right? And that's why they live in that price point. And so people who go, oh yeah, the Leica is just a wanker's camera, so overpriced, you know. It's like, well, don't be a dick. It is a very, very, very specific, very task-oriented, focused camera, and it's a street camera. And I took this thing on the streets of India and beat the shit out of it, and that is why it is a $10,000 street photography camera, because it is perfect for that. Now, it's seriously cool in some other areas that we can talk about. But
can I just jump in for a sec there? So a GFX 100S Mark II is in Australia, it's about 80 for the body only. 100, that doesn't make any sense. It's $8,700 for the body only, so that's with 102 megapixel sensor. The other one, which is the 100 Mark II, which became before it, that's like almost $13,000. That's without glass.
I think if this thing is this magical unicorn-y camera is under 10 and potentially even closer to like 8, they'll probably sell quite a few of them. Purely based on the fact that people want 100 megapixel and they think that's super cool. And obviously, as long as it does what they say it is going to do, whether it's, you know, like it's got high quality glass on it and that kind of thing.
Are they going to be able to use it though?
Who?
Like the 100 meg, you know. You've got to have obviously the computer and everything else to back up.
Don't worry about that, Jim. You're worried about that's future people's problem. Don't worry about that. It's whether they'll buy
it. I think this is the point I was making before, and that I bang on about this thing, is that if you're going out and buying a $10,000 point and shoot, you're not worried about dropping another $5,000 on a
computer.
Like it's that, this is that thing, is 99% of the people who blag on online about the value of cameras and how wanky it all is are wankers, because why don't you buy one? And the simple answer to that is, I don't need that. So shut up. Like go and bang on about your X-T5 or your whatever. Now, really important to understand, I own about 700 cameras, and the vast majority of them are not $10,000 street cameras. I shoot a massive amount still on Micro Four Third Olympuses. M1 Mark IIs are one of my most used cameras. Like, it's really important to make that clear. But I just will not enter into an argument with people who want to have a conversation about whether a camera is expensive or not. If it's expensive to you, it's not the camera for you.
Yeah, exactly.
talk to us. I completely agree as well. This should be markets for every level. It's, you know, it's all well and good to say, oh, maybe Leica's not the best value for money. Yeah, it's probably not in terms of like bang for buck. There's lots of other bang for buck cameras out there, but you need to have a premium. And you're spot on. There is no other camera that does what the Q3 does. Because I've tried to take, like, put a different lens on my R5 and make it feel it's still way bigger than the Q3. Yeah. No matter what lens I put it on, it's massive.
The X100 is the closest thing.
It's the closest thing. Look, and it's a crop sensor, and it's an F2 lens instead of F1.7, and it's 40 megapixel instead of 60 megapixel.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah.
I've got an X106.
But it's a quarter of the price. So it's for a different market.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's why
they sell. I'll tell you what's really interesting. I'm in a couple of Fuji groups, I'm an admin at the biggest Fuji group in Australia. And it's interesting. I see these people having these arguments over this mythical camera that Fuji hasn't even acknowledged exists yet, and they're arguing over some of the features that it might not have. And I said, I know a lot of these photographers, and some of them are already shooting with GFX, so they're already forking out tens of thousands of dollars. They already own GFXs.
Yeah.
In fact, I think two of them who are having the argument own two GFXs each, and they're arguing and complaining about this mythical thing that's a rumor. And I jumped on. I got sick of it. I jumped on and said, look, you know, you guys are all scratching your heads and arguing over something you don't even know exists. It's probably not something that's made for you. You've already got two GFXs, and you use them for fashion, and the other one uses them for concerts. And it's like you're complaining over something that doesn't even exist yet. Just focus on what you've got. I blame Apple for this, that they make us feel like the next product is for us.
Yeah.
Mm. We've fallen into this consumerism habit that we think that the next iPhone is for us because they market it so well, and we see this in the camera world too, where, you know, and Justin, you're the biggest sucker for this, that, you know, the next generation comes out. No, I love you, don't get me wrong, but you're a fool sometimes. But the next generation comes out and you're seriously drooling
always.
I'll share with you the Q3, right? So people hit, this is my Q3 experience. I'm 53 years old. I'll start with that, right? I don't make a lot of money. But photography is my life, literally. Like photography came to me. Photography saved my life. Like, it is a very deep emotional connected thing to my mental health, to my life, to everything. And at the end of last year, I locked in a trip to India. I go there and do street photography. And I had always looked at the Q3s, right? And what happened was I always looked at the Q2s and a monochrome. I wanted a monochrome. And I had a chat with my Leica guy here at the Leica shop here, and he said, look, let me see what I can do. And I made the decision to buy it. And this is why I bought it. I didn't actually think it was going to make better images than if I took my A7 to India, right? I was a realist about that. The reason I bought it was I felt like I had come of age, right? I felt like I had done the hard work, that I had given so deeply to my art form, like deeply I had given, and not just to myself, but to other people. And I had this moment where it was literally a gift to myself. And what happened, oh my gosh, the goosebumps are just coming off my arm. And what happened is it was like a celebration for me of coming of age. And then this thing happened when it arrived and I got it and I turned it on. And those first sort of few trips away, and then definitely in India, there's something about, it's like driving a classic car. It has history, it has depth, it has, like, I honestly felt like Henri Cartier-Bresson was by my side when I was in India going, just calm down, man, like, this is, you know. And so that was, for me, was what it was. It almost, the money was almost irrelevant because it was so much more than that. I was being more considerate when I was making the images. I was being all those things as well, right? So it was less about the money. It was more of a spiritual purchase for me. And it's remained. It's something I've not regretted. It's been a year and I've made a lot of images with it. I know every flaw in it now.
It's a feeling. It's not.
Yes.
Yeah. It's different to just having a tool or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bruce asks the question here about the X1D, right? So I've also shot with the X cameras, and I remember very early in my photography career, I bought my first ever camera when I was 39, right? And I thought I was pretty shit hot. I'd come from a very serious commercial background in sales. And I remember exhibiting my work for the first time, and a guy came up and looked at one of my images, and he said, "This is interesting." And I said, "Yeah, it looks, yeah, it's really good," and all this. And he said to me, he says, "Oh, I'm the," introduced himself as the Hasselblad agent for South Australia. And I said, "Oh my gosh, how nice to meet you." And I said, "Aren't Hasselblads for dicks?" And pretty much, and he just looked at me, and we had this laugh, and then we chatted about it. And I said, "What would be different about this image if I'd shot it on a Hasselblad?" And he looked at me, and he goes, "It would feel different." And I went, "Pardon?" He says, "It would feel different. You just reminded me of that." And I said, "What would feel different?" And he said, "Everything. You would feel different, the way you made it. The image would feel different. And the only way you will ever understand how it feels different is to make an image with one of these cameras." And you know what? He was so right. So right. The Blads were amazing. This is amazing. It just feels different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. It sings to you.
Yeah. The autofocus is shit, but it's not designed for that. It has these funny little markings on the lens. They're not there for show. Like it's
the autofocus I don't enjoy. I thought it would be better when a lot of people mentioned the Q2 was average autofocusing and the Q3 was a big upgrade. I would hate to use a Q2 if the Q3 is a big upgrade in autofocus. The Q3 must have sucked.
I've got a question for you, Justin. If I said to you, "Oh, here is a Q3 monochrome, would you swap your Q3 for it?"
They haven't made a Q3 monochrome yet, have they?
No, not yet.
No.
So the thing is, I really like shooting JPEG with the Q3. I shoot JPEG plus DNGs, but yeah. I really like the JPEGs that come out of it.
Yeah.
And from what I've heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, but the monochrome series cameras don't do JPEG. They only do a very low contrast looking DNG that's extremely rich with what would you call it? You know, gradients. It captures everything, but then you do have to post process it.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether it does appeal to me, but I don't know whether for that and for that sort of money, I've taken a lot of color photos on it that I really enjoy, and I'm like, yeah, they would all be gone. I don't know. I don't think I could commit to it for that much money.
Yeah.
I definitely want to try it first because I read a few reviews about the Q2. No, the M11 monochrome, because obviously that would be the sensor. The M11 monochrome, and a few people said, you know, it's an absolute revelation. It's the most amazing camera I've ever shot with. The files, you can't believe it. And then I read another review and the guy was like, the black and white photos kind of look the same as the M11 and it does color too.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you would have to test this yourself.
Without getting into technical conversation, I always just used to, I thought it was odd, you know, and then I learned the back end, the technical side of why monochromes are monochrome, and that's why the images are so wild, is because they just, that's just everything. Like,
have you shot with one yet?
No, but I, my wife is, I've put her on Facebook Marketplace. So I'm trying to get rid of her so that when the monochrome comes, I can drop the money.
Nice.
It's really weird.
I would love to hear what you think if you shoot with one and get to compare it directly.
I promise you, the Leica, the sales manager for Leica Australia knows that the second they land, I will be behind the 400 other Leica people that own 600 of them. I would love one. And I my next trip to India, I would do the entire trip with one monochrome. Yes,
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be very cool.
Yeah.
Couple of batteries in your pocket.
Yep.
Backpack with everything you need for the week or 2 weeks.
Yep.
Yep.
Because that's how I did my last trip, was with an A7S III shooting 100 frame video and the Q3, and it was unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, those videos. We watched those videos at BFOP. They were pretty cool.
Yeah. Is it worth, is it, worth it? Cool. Yes, it is. Absolutely. Yeah,
is it worth it?
Yep.
Yep.
What do you think?
Could you be disappointed with it? 100%. It depends on what your expectations are and what you're doing with it.
I've discovered a technical problem with the camera that it's still an open ticket at the factory.
Mm.
It's me and one other person that they can't fix it.
I remember you telling me about it at BFOP. So that was, 5 or 6 months ago, and they still haven't sorted it out.
No, the solution they gave me was to buy Capture One.
Okay, so Lightroom.
Given how much you gave them for the camera, you think they could have offered you a discount on Capture One? I'm sure they could have worked that out for you.
Nah.
I know. I must admit, I the other day I caught myself looking at the Leica Deluxe 8. I'm hoping they bring out. I know it's got a little power zoom. I'm not a fan of power zooms, especially on point and shoots. I'd rather a fixed focal length. Yeah. But just for a more affordable, you know, in my ballpark, kind of Leica, that kind of appeals to me for a street shooter.
Yeah.
What would appeal to you about a Leica Deluxe 8 that Fuji don't deliver? Something like the X100. Is it the red dot?
I think so. I just think just that. maybe I'm a bit like Dennis. I'm coming of age soon. I'm 52. Maybe when I hit 53, what happens to every photographer. You got to buy a Leica.
53.
Yeah, well, yeah. Or I could get the 43 Q3.
Now that is a nice camera.
I think the gods are telling me something. I think that's a sign.
Yeah, the 28 was amazing in India. It was amazing. The work I made in India with this thing was just outrageous.
Yeah, they're cool cameras. In the interest of time, it's 8:53. For those of you watching and listening along, this is the Camera Life Podcast, a random photography show. In case you hadn't worked that out, Justin, is there anything else we want to cover off today?
No, we covered off gear talk then. So I think we're pretty good. Other than anything Dennis wants to add about what he's up to or what he's going to be up to.
Well, I've got my lucky straps on the Q3 now. I need to show you something because I do a. Let me just get some exposure here. All right.
Oh, nice.
So I have my strap like this, so it's on the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Interesting. Yeah.
And because I have an Arca Swiss plate grip on the bottom, and then I have it on the side, and so that's because I don't like any restrictions around my right hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, same.
Yep.
As minimal as possible around there. I'm the same.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. And this thing's gorgeous, by the way. Thank you.
Can you show us what it looks like when you put it on?
Oh hell yeah! Second one. Oh.
The background of the studio there. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Nice.
We can't actually see the camera, but you look gorgeous.
Yeah.
I can picture that in India, just swanning around.
Yeah, like that. Just like that.
No one would see you coming.
That's great. It feels really nice. And very discreet. I'm gonna have a chat to you about how to sort of lather it, you know, treat it a bit. It'll be nice. Yep. It is funny though. I did a post on it today, and it was amazing how many people went, "Oh yeah, I've got a lucky strap. Oh yeah, I've got a lucky strap. Oh
yeah." Yeah, we get that. Actually, we just the team just got an email from someone who spotted a couple in the wild. The OM3 limited edition for the OM3 release, limited edition OM3 strap. Someone just shot us a couple of pictures. What site was it on? Was it on Petapixel? It was in their forums.
Yeah,
I think it was.
Trying to find it now.
They look beautiful. Oh, I think I've got it.
No.
I'll try to get rid of it. No, I don't think I have it here. It's from Bob someone. Oh, here we go. Is this going to be that? Yep, hang on. I'll bring mine up. Just very quickly, and then we'll wrap up. So let me just share this with you all. Oh, look at that. I know it's small. I'm sorry. I can't increase the size of this screen.
Yeah.
So that's the first one. And then there's a second image, I think.
It looks really nice, that camera, by the way.
Mm, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it does.
I'm a big fan.
This one says, post a picture up if you're part of, it smells frigging awesome. I don't know what he's trying to say. Hey, my lovely camera strap is made in Australia. I hope yours is as well. They're all made in Australia.
Yeah.
Just ask Jim. He's the head of customer service and order fulfillment. They are made in Australia. He puts those little Australian-made labels on them. I've photographed him doing it.
And so does Justin.
Yeah, I put a lot of these ones on too. It's been a busy couple of weeks.
I see Justin doing a lot of spawning around.
Greg, you're welcome to jump into the packing.
I offered to come down on the weekend.
Where are you guys?
No, I'm in South Yarra. They're in Bendigo.
Yeah,
I'm in the South Yarra office.
Bendigo, Victoria.
Yes. Yep. Wow. Yes. Right in the middle.
Right in the middle.
I'm coming over. I'll drop in.
Yeah, cool. Come visit us.
Cool. Yeah, we'll come and do some light. I'm gonna do a light painting with this. I'm gonna light paint.
Really?
In Bendigo.
Hey.
Yeah.
I have a car that I would love. I probably can't afford you, but my father's got a Mustang. Okay. I should get it light painted for his 70th.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Hell yeah.
Sneak it out of the garage.
Yeah. We can steal it for the night.
Yeah, we could see
that. I'm trying to find an excuse to go to Melbourne. All these sort of stars are aligning, and Bendigo would be a good pit stop.
Hey, come to Melbourne.
We're like an hour and a half up the road.
Yeah. And if you come to Melbourne, let me know and we'll do a street walk or something. If you come to Bendigo, let me know and I'll come to Bendigo too.
That'd be rad.
And we'll do some light painting.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, we'll get a pool happening.
Amazing.
Well,
we can use some liquid light in the pool.
Oh, yeah. Lots happening. Lots of plans, folks. Lots of stuff happening in the future on The Camera Life and with Lucky Straps. So make sure you like and subscribe. I think we're going to wrap it up there, lads.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. What an honor. You guys rock, man. And this thing is just so good.
You're the star of the show tonight, mate. But look, thanks for joining us for a chat. It's good to catch up with you because we heard so many amazing stories in your interview podcast, and it's been good to catch up with you and see some of the results of that. And I think you should be really proud.
Thank you.
About all your work, but the auto art is just phenomenal.
Thank you.
But look, on that note, I think we're going to wrap. So thank you, Jim, for joining us late. No, but great. Thank you. It's no
thank you.
That's right.
Thanks for drying out my camera, Jim.
Yeah, good on you, Jim. And Dennis, good to have you on the show again. Hopefully we'll have you back sometime in the future.
Anytime. And I really enjoyed the Thursday morning one. That was I just jumped on. I saw it pop up and I just happened to be around. So anyone who's jump on those, they're great.
Yeah,
they're really cool. We love them. We love what we do here. That's the main thing. We love what we do. And if we encourage one person to pick up a camera or someone to get out of a funk or someone to try a new skill or technique and they love it, well, then we've won the day. But look, on that note, everybody, I want to thank you all for listening and watching. Please don't forget to like and subscribe. Hit the bell for notifications. We have big plans this year and, it's already March. It is marching along. But we will have some stuff coming up that we'll share with you. And look, this has been The Camera Life, the random photography show, the best random photography show on the internet.
Before we go, Philip Johnson says, thanks, all great episode. Who's on Thursday? It is Will Godward? Godward?
Yeah, Will Godward.
Yep. Godward, who is a Nightscape astrophotographer, award winning.
Will is a lovely guy.
Yeah.
Wow. I can't.
So we've got Will this week. Next week, the week after, provided he doesn't get COVID again, we've got Glenn Lavender joining us. Phenomenal. I can't even speak anymore. Phenomenal body of work. But stick around and we'll show you a good time.
That's right.
Does that sound wrong? Sounds a bit creepy. But
a little bit. It's like me putting my wife on the internet for sale.
Yeah.
That sounds a bit odd. Not quite what I meant.
Bruce Moyle.
Thanks, gents.
Thanks,
Craig Murphy.
Thanks, Craig.
Chat. See you in Bright.
See you in Bright, Craig.
Well, we'll probably all be in Bright, Craig.
We'll all be in Bright. We're going to party hard like lunatics.
Yeah, we'll get a pool. Yeah. We'll ship in we'll get some of the, how you can get like a party jacuzzi on a trailer? We'll get one of those. And we'll just park it at the back.
Greg's funding that one.
Yeah. I need to talk to Justin about a pay rise. On that note, everybody, let's play it out. See you on Thursday.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Have fun. Justin.
I should have had this play when I threw my camera strap, by the way.
Now, bye, everybody.
See you later. Have fun.
Yeah.
We're getting into it. What was happening?